Support for KSJD's streaming comes from Osprey PAX, independent since 1974, setting the standard for creating and producing innovative, high-quality, caring equipment designed to inspire and ease your journey. Osprey PAX is committed to the local communities where it operates and to protecting the wild places its customers love to explore. For more information, visit OspreyPAX.com.
Good morning, this is KSJD, I'm Tom Yoder. All over the world and throughout time, human beings have left their mark on their surroundings. Here in the American Southwest, we see many instances of prehistoric rock art that inspire curiosity about the meanings and intentions behind it. Remarkably, the prehistoric rock art of Australia contains similar elements that we see here and gives us insight into the similarities and differences of people surviving under similar circumstances halfway across the globe. My guest this morning is David Lee. He is an independent rock art researcher, author, and lecturer focusing on the function and context of rock art in the Great Basin and the Mojave Desert and the ethnography of Australian rock art. He has documented rock art in California, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Idaho, and has co-authored several papers and reports on the rock art of the Mojave Desert and Eastern California. For the last 10 years, he's been studying rock art and associated traditional knowledge in the Northern Territory of Australia, and has authored and co-authored a series of books and reports on the subject. He is the co-founder of Western Rock Art Research, a nonprofit organization based in California and currently collaborating with the Rock Art Center at the University of Western Australia on a comparison of the arid lands rock art of Australia and the Western United States. He'll be giving a lecture titled Closer Than We Know, Comparing the Rock Art of Australia and Western North America at the Sunflower Theater in downtown Cortez tomorrow evening, Tuesday, September 22nd, at 7 p.m. Good morning, David. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me and giving me this opportunity to share our work with listeners.
Let's talk a little bit. I'd like to know, how did you get interested in rock art? What was your path into this research?
Well, like most people, I just enjoyed traveling, hiking through the canyons and mountains of the Southwest and the Western United States, and would come on across these engravings and paintings and wondered about the people who lived and loved the same country that I loved traveling through and wanted to learn more about them. And I just lucked into finding a teacher who could teach me how to document it. And I, once I found out how little had really been adequately documented and how little we know about the hard archaeology of the rock art, my wife and I made that our life's work to document as much as we can.
And what about Northern Australia? How did that come into the equation for you?
Well, we had been working here for about 10 years through the Western Desert, mostly the Mojave and the Great Basin, and had this opportunity in 2005 to visit Australia with some friends. And especially the top part of Australia is known as sort of the mecca of rock art in the rock art world. So we were just going as tourists. But there were two things that I really wanted to look at. One was that other researchers, especially in Australia, had noticed huge similarities in the iconography between the arid lands here in Western North America and in Australia. It turns out that the non-figurative, more wavy lines and circles and dot patterns, those type of things, circles, they are a product of a style or tradition of rock art here in the Western United States called the Western Archaic, or what has been called Great Basin Abstract. And it pretty much dies out as you get into this part of the country. And once the archaic rock art here in the Southwest is more figurative, big anthropomorphic human-looking figures and things. But the non-figurative, what we might call abstract, although I don't like that word, is centered in the arid lands of Western North America and going down into Central America and even into South America. But it dies out when you get into more well-watered regions. Well, the same thing happens in Australia. And that style of rock art here and that style of rock art in Australia is both the type of rock art or style or tradition that covers the most acreage of each continent, but also has the greatest time depth. It goes back Here in America, we know it's at least 7,000 years old because of a few different dating techniques, and that it was made pretty much right up into contact times here. It was also made at least 15,000 years ago in Australia, perhaps much, much longer. And again, it was made right up into contact times. So the length of time that people were making that type of rock art spanned many thousands of years. And why would they be so similar on both sides of the world? And I wasn't the first one to notice that, but I really was looking forward to this opportunity to go check that out.
Well, let's talk about how you go about this work, because anytime you're looking at art, it's hard to apply science to art. You've got a lot of meanings behind it. And of course, human beings do all kinds of crazy things for all kinds of crazy reasons. What are some of your methods? How do you go about this process of studying rock art on two different continents?
Well, what we do, we're firmly committed to the documentation, and we feel that we're actually right in the middle of the descriptive era of rock art rather than post-stylistic or all these other names that people are giving it. It turns out that to modern standards, only a very small percentage of the rock art in America or the world has been documented. And we believe very strongly that in most cases, photography is not the final word in the documentation, that it really does require accurate scale drawings of every mark made by humans, as well as with all other archaeology, we document all the associated features and artifacts, vegetation, geology, other associated archaeological sites in the region to give us a bigger picture. And we do the same thing in Australia, except in Australia, some of the sites may have hundreds of paintings and thousands of engravings, and so there just isn't the time to do the drawings. But in Australia, we have the added thing that we have an elder. We're working with an elder who really is perhaps one of the last five people left alive on Earth who grew up living a traditional life in the shelters that his ancestors had painted the paintings and engraved the petroglyphs in, and he was trained in all the traditional stories and knowledge of his country and is very, very keen to pass it on for his descendants and for the whole rest of the world to learn how important and what a part of their worldview the rock art was.
If you're just tuning in, this is KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning I'm talking with David Lee. He's an independent rock art researcher, author, and lecturer, and he'll be giving a lecture titled Closer Than We Know, Comparing the Rock Art of Australia and Western North America at the Sunflower Theater tomorrow night, Tuesday, September 22nd at 7 p.m. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Stay with us. We are back. I'm Tom Yoder. This is KSJD. This morning, my guest is David Lee. He's an independent rock art researcher, and we're talking about his work comparing and contrasting the rock art of Australia and the Western United States. Let's talk a little bit, David, about the connections that we're seeing between Australia and the Western United States in terms of rock art. What is it telling us about prehistory? What is it telling us about the people that were making that art?
Well, that's the part of my work that's sort of taken a whole different path, is that when I started doing this, it was just to document the rock art for future research and to be able to manage the sites. But in working with these folks in Australia, the rock art really is an important part of their living worldview. And they still have all the stories that go along with the rock art. And it literally does address on some level every part of their life. There really is no part of their life. I had a problem at the beginning and still do with rock art research here in America in particular, where there's a real push to simplify the meanings of the rock art and try to, and science by its nature does this anyway. It's a reductionist way of looking at things that works fine for certain things, but I think not so much for people and cultures, which are very complex. And the rock art, what we're getting out of this comparative study between rock art and here is that there's still so much living ethnographic knowledge specifically concerning the rock art in a few areas in Australia where there is a lot of cultural knowledge still here in America, but very little of it specifically regarding specific rock art sites that are what we would call site-specific. And it turns out that actually what the Native Americans here have said since the very beginning is the way that Australian Aboriginal folks look at their rock art, too, that it really addresses every aspect of their life on some fashion. And one thing we've learned, this is going to sound strange to say it over in public, but is that the rock art sites themselves are really not all that sacred. The land that they sit in is. All the land. Every bit of the land. And that's something that our Western culture doesn't really want to hear, because we want to know which areas we can completely develop and which areas we need to set aside for sacred. And it really is a worldwide, for Indigenous folks, there are certain similarities that really are worldwide. And one is viewing really the entire world as having a sacredness that humans are connected to on extremely complicated levels. And all of us, every human on Earth, has had somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 30 to 50,000 ancestors who were hunter-gatherer forager people, and none of us have had more than 200 or 300 ancestors who knew how to grow crops, build a car, or a bank account. and so we really, all of us, have a real direct link to the world around us. And I feel personally, it's my own opinion, but going forward into the future, we can learn an awful lot from these Indigenous cultures about how we individuals are linked to all of the living world around us. And it makes it much harder for you to take advantage of or destroy a part of nature if you really consider it part of you and part of your family. And that's more or less the lesson that we've learned from our friends in Australia.
Do you feel like the work that you're doing is having a significant impact on, say, conservation efforts by Native American groups, or even just general conservation across the West and or in Australia?
We do. Actually, it's been very gratifying. It's a depressing side of our work, but a lot of our documentation has been used in court cases involving people who have done damage to rock art sites. And the drawings are much more impressive to a judge or a jury. That's another reason for the drawings. But also, it's very gratifying now that our work is being used in this international study. And we look at our work as being about half and half. Half of the reason for doing it is to be able to give the land managers and the tribal groups the information that they need to be able to manage the sites. The other half of the reason is to provide documentation for future researchers. But in Australia in particular, our mapping work, the rock art has become only a small part of our work, and mapping all of the known and named and storied sites in the country has become the main thrust there, which the people are very happy to be using. They finally have a big body of work that they can use to show people who are trying to come in and do development on their land. Northern Australia is, like a lot of other places in the world, they're in a very bad place politically right now. There is an awful lot of government and media sanctioned racism going on right now in an attempt to try to take away lands that they fought very hard from the 70s to the 90s to get back. And we're very gratified that some of our work will actually be used by these folks to try to hang on to their land and try to promote their culture into the future.
Well, if people want to learn more about the work that you're doing, and it sounds like there's a lot of different angles to what you're doing, or if they want to see pictures of the rock art that you're comparing between Australia and the United States, what are some good resources for them online or printed or otherwise?
Right now, we have a couple of places online. We don't really have much of a presence online, but we do have a website that deals with all of our work here in America. It's at westernrockartresearch.com. And I have another sort of a blog, but it's more of a website, really, that talks about our work in Australia at understandingdreamtimerockart.wordpress.com. And there's a very nice book by our teacher here in the States, a man named Don Christensen, who's recorded a huge amount of rock art, a recent book that just came out 2 or 3 years ago called The Rock Art of the Grand Canyon Region. That's a very, very good book, I believe, for anybody living in this Southwest area.
All right. David, thank you so much for coming in this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That's David Lee. He's an independent rock art researcher, author, and lecturer. He'll be giving a lecture titled Closer Than We Know, Comparing the Rock Art of Australia and Western North America at the Sunflower Theater here in downtown Cortez tomorrow evening, Tuesday, September 22nd at 7 p.m. I'm Tom Yoder. Thanks for listening to KSJD this morning.